Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4, packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
From Jordan Love.
Now back to overtime with Grandy, Madsen, and Bennett with sounds from the locker room and your calls at 888-957-9570. Overtime continues now.
That was Kevin Burkhardt on Fox calling one of Romeo Doubs's three catches. I didn't realize this till right now. He only had three catches, Romeo Doubs did. They all happened on the third drive, and they were all third down conversions. Third and 11, Dobbs for 29 yards. Third and 5, a slant to Dobbs, who ran right past Isaac Yiadom, 10 yards first down. Third and 10, Dobbs, inside breaker against Renardo Green, breaks a tackle, gains 15 yards for a first down. Those were his only three catches, and they happened to all be on the same drive. All third and at least intermediate, two third and long conversions, and it led to a touchdown for the Green Bay Packers. The Packers at one point were what? You guys can help me out with this, and welcome back to Overtime. Mark, Randy, Kyle, Matz, and Sterling Bennett with you. At one point, the Packers were what? Like 5 for 6 on third downs?
Yeah.
They just absolutely decimated the Niners on the money downs. They finished 6 for 13, so the Niners' defense was much better in the second half, but that third drive specifically that made it 17-0 and I think kind of made everyone feel like the game was officially over. They hurt the Niners on 3rd and 11, 3rd and 5, and 3rd and 10. And we all saw it coming. Romeo Doubs, Romeo Doubs, Romeo Doubs over and over and over again.
It's easy. It's insane. We were just looking at the box score here real quick. The 49ers averaged more yards per play than the Packers today.
That's fun.
What?
How many fewer plays? 20 fewer plays
and 84. Four fewer yards.
And time of possession was about 37 minutes to 23 Oof. Minutes.
And that's just, they got smoked, dude.
They did. Yeah. Yuck. That was bad. 888-957-9570. We're with you here on Overtime.
1 for 1 in the red zone, though.
The Niners were?
Look at them go.
Wow.
Hundo. Look at them go.
There we go. That only increased
That's called
their...
improvement.
Who's got it better than us? Everybody.
You can thank George Kittle for that. Could you imagine Niners in the red zone without George Kittle?
No.
He has, what, 8 red zone touchdowns?
All 8 of his touchdowns are shared in the red zone.
They might be setting a record for the least efficient red zone offense if it wasn't for George Kittle. Like, he has been a red zone monster on an offense that is one of the worst red zone teams in the league. It is actually incredible how much success he's had in the red zone, considering how poor the rest of the team has been.
We can take a look and do a little math if you want. He has 8 red zone touchdowns this year. The 49ers entering today had 20. So when you take out George Kittle's 8...
12 red zone touchdowns without George Kittle.
12 for... Is that 29?
12 for 29, that's 41%.
Ugh. Yikes.
It's not great. Not great. Tough. So quick math, yes, not good.
Not great.
Good
not great,
without
Bob.
George Kittle.
But guess what?
Yeah, go ahead.
That's what you're paying him to do. Score in the red zone.
Yeah.
He's doing exactly what
Does
his contract says he's supposed to do. Score in the red zone. Everybody else, not so much.
Yeah, one of the few Niners that showed up today was George Kittle. 6 catches on 6 targets. He caught everything thrown his way, 82 yards and a touchdown. The Niners' only touchdown in this game, it was George Kittle. He has been very good this year, and he continued that today. Okay, 888-957-9570. We will hear from Kyle Shanahan coming up a little bit later on, but let's run through some of these calls. Rob has been waiting patiently. Rob is in San Bruno. Rob, what's up? You're on Overtime on 95.7 The Game. How you doing?
What's going on? I'm good. I think it's easy to say Debo washed this and that. He not washed. The offense just predictable. It's been figured out. The problem is Kyle favoritism is going to be his downfall. CMC should not be getting more carries than Mason right now. Mason was the league leader in rushing. We've seen it with our eyes. He was hitting the hole harder. He was running dudes over. He bought a certain feel when we was feared when we was running off tackle and up the gut. We're not getting that with CMC. CMC can't even break a tackle. You know what I'm saying? He's not that guy this year. He really needs to sit out. You missed 10 weeks with Achilles injury on both legs. Like, you shouldn't even be playing. And then with Debo, look, Debo need to line Debo up in backfield, match him up with safeties and linebackers. The same thing you're doing with CMC when you're just checking the ball down. You're getting 10-yard catches here because you're checking it right down the middle of the field. Do that for Debo. Debo can honestly still break tackles. And when he gets the ball, he can still do something. All right? We didn't draft him. He said, oh, yeah, he's a great route runner. We know he's not a great route runner. We knew that from off top. But the way they're using CMC, Debo needs to be in that position because CMC cannot break tackles. He's not doing anything. Since he's came back, he hasn't been that type of player. He's not that guy this year like he was last year. And I think it's hurting the offense. Pearsall. Pearsall can't get open. We dropped him in the first round. I've seen it live. He cannot beat press.
Okay.
He can't.
Okay. Rob, when was the last time you saw Debo Samuel like just break a tackle, run through a couple of dudes like we've seen him do for years in the past? I haven't seen him in a long time, Rob.
I mean, this is the NFL. He's not going to do that all the time. Those dudes get paid, too. They don't want to get ran by a receiver, and I understand that. But when you put him in position, Matt, you got to put him in position. You got to match it. Like, you can do the same thing you're doing with CMC. Put Debo on the backfield and match him up with linebackers and safety. Work the middle of the field. He can still break tackles. He may not be running dudes over, but he can break tackles. We've seen that today when they put the ball in his hands. So in that interception – that he threw, that wasn't deep threat and triple coverage behind him. That would have been a great catch, and Debo might would have died when he caught it. So let's not do that. So my thing is this: CMC is not ready to play right now. You benched the guy who was leading the league in rushing. I thought we played the high hand around here, or only worked for Trey Lance. We played the high hand, right? The high hand was Mason. Mason's a better runner this year. It's just facts. So why isn't he playing? You get this guy 2 carries. He was leading the league in rushing.
Hey, Rob, appreciate the call. I think everyone here is in agreement with you. You got to get Jordan Mason more touches. But this is also Christian McCaffrey, the reigning offensive player of the year and an MVP finalist.
Hey, come on. Also, just objectively, Debo is not breaking tackles like he was last year.
Okay, I got a stat for you to back this up.
Please.
And I know you have stats as well on this. There are only three players.
We all have stats, Mark, okay? We all have stats.
We all have PFF accounts.
There are only three players that have averaged fewer than 3 yards per carry among the 96 ball carriers with at least 25 carries this year. Trey Sermon, Zamir White.
Oof.
And Debo Samuel. Trey Sermon, Zamir White, terrible running backs.
Not good players.
Niners know specifically about Trey Sermon because they drafted him.
Sure.
And then Debo Samuel.
Yeah, man. Look, I don't wholly disagree with what the last caller was saying. I'm with you. I believe Jordan Mason should be getting more touches.
Yes.
What did he finish with today?
3 carries for 8 yards, although he had a 16-yarder. He must have lost a bunch on a fumble or something.
Oh, my God.
I don't remember. It must have been late in the game.
A long of 16 and then had 8 total yards. Yeah. But that first carry was 16 yards. That gave him 3 for 29 in his last 3 carries. Like, Jordan Mason needs to be getting the ball. I totally agree.
Yes.
And that carry came early in the third quarter. Up to that point, leading up to the play where Mason got his first carry, the Niners had 14 rushing yards on the game. He then had 16 on the next play. Yes.
So I don't hate that idea at all. In fact, I totally agree with the caller, 100% bet we are in lockstep there. What I disagree with is that they need to get Debo Samuel the ball more. Debo last year houses that screen today. He just doesn't have the juice he used to have. He's getting beat to the edge by defensive linemen on jet sweeps. And like on some level, it's the looks he's getting, right? Like that's what Kyle Shanahan said. Oh, he's going against bad looks. But also, like, his broken tackle numbers are way down. His yards after catch per reception at the lowest rate of his career or lowest number of his career. He's not breaking tackles. He's not running away from guys. He's not surprising teams anymore. And like the caller said, he's not going to route people up. And when you're like grizzly bear with chainsaw for arms rushing ability goes away, he doesn't have a ton. And you just see it. Like, he just doesn't have juice like that anymore. And that's okay. Like, it happens. He's super physical. They ran him into the ground. He's an all-pro. He's amazing. I have never seen a player like him.
2021 was amazing. Unbelievable.
We'll never see a receiver do what Deebo Samuel did in that season. I feel really confident in saying that. Because how many next Deebo Samuels have there been in the draft? A bunch. And they don't too do many. It. Right. Too many. Exactly. So, man, I don't agree that Deebo Samuel needs to be getting the ball more, because every time he's gotten the ball, it has been wholly ineffective this year.
When this in previous years, you see him break off, you know, he'll knock around through two safeties and a linebacker, and he'll fight for 3-4 extra yards. And this year, it's like one linebacker and he's down.
Yeah.
And it's a negative 1 yard run on 2nd and 10.
Mm-hmm.
And your team's in 3rd and 11. It's a, well, yes, a screen pass that you get 21 yards on, which is great. You'll take that all the time. That is a play, like you said, Kyle, that Deebo takes to the house last year.
Yep.
Now, yes, he had the big kick return today that got negated, so there is that to Rob's defense, the caller, but we are now 12 games or 11 games into the season. Deebo, outside of one game, maybe two this year, has shown nothing. There's not been the power. There's not been the ability to fight through contact. It's simply just been, I get held on, you know, at the line of scrimmage. I get stuff there. I can't go anywhere. I'm giving my quarterback nowhere to throw the football. I'm double covered or whatever. And then when he has the football, it's nothing like Deebo Samuel has been. And unfortunately for a player like him that can't run routes, he becomes a one-trick pony, and when that one trick goes away, unfortunately, he becomes useless. Now, I don't think Deebo Samuel's useless. I think there is ways to get him involved, but sure. You're not taking away CMC carries. In fact, I would rather have Jordan Mason touch the football almost every single time Deebo Samuel has this year. It's more effective. And even today alone, the issue isn't CMC getting carries. It's the fact is the offensive line cannot block at all for
huge
Deebo.
Problem.
For Mason, for Christian McCaffrey, there was a stat on the TV screen today that popped up like in the early fourth quarter, and I'm sure it's different now than what it was then. But on outside zone runs today, there was 11 attempts by San Francisco under 10 yards. They run an outside zone scheme on offense.
That's their bread and butter.
And they have under 10 yards on 11 attempts. That ain't Deebo's fault. That ain't CMC's fault. That ain't Mason's fault. That is an offensive line deficiency that has hampered this offense all year long.
Yes, very well said. And if we could go even further, whether it is just talent of the offensive line and that being the problem, or if it's just the scheme getting a little old and stale and defenses adjusting and figure out a way to stop it, to slow it down. I mean, both of those points hit home with Kyle Shanahan. It is, okay, you got to do a better job finding the right guys to play on your offensive line, and you got to adjust your offensive scheme and, you know, adjust to the adjustments. And we haven't quite seen that yet from the San Francisco 49ers, and that is an area that they can adjust, and they're going to have to, because that has been their bread and butter for so long. It's what helped Christian McCaffrey become the offensive player of the year a season ago, and they've had very, very little success with it. And I think to our caller's point, Robin San Bruno, this isn't Kyle Sterling and I saying that Deebo Samuel is washed because he had one catch for 21 yards. And if he had four catches for 60 yards, that would be better. Like Rob's saying, just give Deebo the McCaffrey touches, because Debo's still that guy. McCaffrey isn't. Sure, if he has three more catches underneath for 7 yards each, his stats look better. Mm-hmm. But we can still watch him as a football player and say, well, you're still going down on the first contact. Mm-hmm. You're not breaking tackles. You can't run past people as often anymore. Like, yeah, the stats are one thing, and that's not good, but when he has the ball, what does he look like? Is he separating? Is he breaking tackles? And for me, guys, the answer is pretty clear. This is not a statistics thing. The statistics have been pretty bad. They could be better if they just gave him touches and easy catches, but it's so much deeper than just the statistics.
Look at the play calling.
They didn't give him the ball
exactly.
When they had their backup quarterback. If 3 years ago, he touches the ball 15 times,
minimum,
I guarantee you.
Minimum. And that's just it. Like, you think Kyle Shanahan doesn't want to give Deebo Samuel the ball? Kyle Shanahan loves Deebo. Kyle Shanahan would love to call end-arounds and jet sweeps.
Oh, my God. He would have stayed up all night this week devising ways to get Deebo the ball.
Right, but he just doesn't have it. Go back and watch Week 10. Go find Deebo Samuel's carry. It was like a jet sweep he was going right to left.
Yep.
He got beat to the edge by a defensive tackle. That is a thing that happened.
And lost a yard.
and lost a yard.
Yeah.
The exact same thing happened last week. He just does not have that juice anymore. I'm telling you, this is not stats. This is not me. I love Deebo Samuel. He's one of my favorite players who has ever worn a 49er uniform. This is not anti-Deebo. Watch him. Get outside of your Deebo fandom for a second and watch. And if you can watch and you tell me that's the exact same player, I would love to know your notes. Because I have not gotten that vibe at all.
Yeah.
It's just a player that is nearing the age of 30, that has played an extremely physical role on this team, has carried the offense for an entire season, and inevitably, father time catches up to you, your body breaks down, and you can't be utilized in the same way you once were. Now, unfortunately, Deebo Samuel is getting paid to be utilized the same way in which he was when he was an All-Pro.
Right.
Now, you'd like to think that in an offense that in a normal year would have a healthy Kittle and Brandon Ayuk and Christian McCaffrey and maybe Jordan Mason Mixon here or there, although it's had not seen that so far, even when he's been great. Like, you would like to use Deebo in maybe a lesser capacity, but with like three or four like home run hitting touches a game. But that's not how the NFL works. When he's out there, you know he's getting the football. And when he's getting the football, there has been nothing that makes you say, oh, there's All-Pro Deebo Samuel. It's like, wow, there is, unfortunately, an overpaid, later in his career, All-Pro player. That's life. That's football. And Deebo is at the end of his contract. I would not be shocked if they say goodbye next year. He's given them nothing to latch onto and say, yep, he's worth what he's being paid.
Yep.
And I hope that changes. I would love for Deebo Samuel to lock in next game and carry this offense the way he did a couple of years back. It would change the entire season. But the odds that happen are darn near 0% because of where he is right now in his career.
Yeah, and if you were to tell me, or I think you guys would probably agree, tell any of us, preseason that McCaffrey would miss the first, 9 games of the year? First 10 weeks, would first play week 11?
Week 10.
Mm-hmm. I probably would have said, oh man, I guarantee you Deebo Samuel had himself a good first half of the year. Because he would have gotten all the touches he could possibly ask for. And it hasn't happened, even without McCaffrey.
You saw week one. Their break in case of emergency option at running back was Jordan Mason, obviously. But then it was, hey, here's a lot of Deebo Samuel. Here's a lot of fun stuff with Deebo Samuel. But he just doesn't have it anymore, man.
Yeah, it's rough.
Maybe he's hurt. Like, maybe he's super banged up.
Maybe there's something they're not telling us.
But go ahead.
Am I wrong to, again, I'm speculating here, but Deebo Samuel lost a lot of weight coming into the year. Mm-hmm. Got himself in better shape, and I'm not sure if that was to maybe answer the Brandon Ayuk or Deebo Samuel conversation, who stays after this year. Maybe he's faster on his feet, better routes he runs, although that hasn't been the case. I do wonder if losing weight to maybe push back on the Deebo or Ayuk narrative of who they're going to keep may have made him less durable or less stronger to push through some blocks or to push through some tackles. It's all speculative, obviously, but I do wonder if that the offseason program to get himself in better shape actually hurt him in the long run.
I do. I maybe there's something there in terms of breaking tackles and physicality, but he also just seems slower, right? And you feel like losing weight would make you, at the very least, not slower.
More explosive.
Maybe it would make you a little faster.
I had people who cover the team and are there every day at training camp. And I think people here who went to training camp talked about it. Like Deebo Samuel looks like 2021
Deebo. Best shape of his life.
We might be in for a monster Deebo season that makes this offseason really tough when it comes to, wanting to keep it.
Yep.
And he just hasn't happened. It hasn't.
No, not at all. 888-957-9570. Let's go out to Eric in San Francisco. Eric, what's up? You're on overtime. It's Mark, Randy, Kyle, Matt, and Sterling Bennett with you. Eric, how you doing?
Well, all things considered, all right. Happy holidays to you guys.
Yeah, you too, Eric.
Actually, I'm not bringing the fire and brimstone. I just wanted to bring an observation from my days with living with a whole bunch of Philly fans about Andy Reid and to pose a question to you about some potential similarities I'm worried about Kyle Shanahan's current stint with the Niners with what I saw with Andy Reid in his first stint with the Eagles and what I see with him now. And I kind of wanted to pose a question to you. And
okay.
That was,
yeah, go ahead.
In Andy Reid's first 5 seasons, he made the NFC title game, after the first one four straight times. And in that fourth one, that's when T.O. broke his leg and they lost the Super Bowl. And at that time, I was living with a bunch of Philly fans. And after the Super Bowl, for like the next eight seasons, he only made one NFC title game after that. And he missed the playoffs about half the time. And the thing I would always hear my Eagle friends complain to me about that I also saw in the game was that Andy Reid was very dogmatic. He came up through the Packers West Coast system. He ran a very West Coast heavy offense. And when things in the game started to go sideways, he relied on his dogma. And what I'm kind of worried about is we're kind of seeing a similar trend, which was Shanahan's been here for, I guess this is now his eighth season in his first seven. He made two Super Bowls instead of one, but the same amount of NFC title games. And the thing that's troubling to me about what I saw today and kind of over the course of the season, and it's consistent with kind of what Ann Killian wrote in the Chronicle today about his troubling stats about from how he performs when he's down in the fourth quarter versus when he's up, is, again, I'm wondering, I think the best thing that happened to Andy Reid's career was that he got fired, even though he got immediately hired by the Eagles fans, or by the Chiefs the same offseason. Because I think it forced him to kind of reevaluate his kind of coaching philosophy. And the coach I see today is a play caller where he's very dynamic with Patrick Mahomes. And you give him Tyreek Hill and he'll run a jet sweep. Mm-hmm. But if you give him Juju Schuster-Smith, he'll run kind of a more possession receiver, and he's learned to use the tight end with Kelce. And so I'm just wondering, do you think that the rigid dogma that has been the educational framework for football-wise for Kyle Shanahan is kind of holding back that next evolution that would get him from, like Andy Reid, the guy who's going to get your team from 6 to 10 to 12 wins consistently into the playoffs, to being that aggressive guy who's going to win you the Super Bowl? For granted, we were one play away in 2019 with the Garoppolo miss and obviously just right there in overtime. So we were a little bit closer than the Eagles were back in 04. But again, I just had to watch so much Eagles football just because of who I was living with. So I kind of took an interest in Andy Reid, and I kind of see some similarities. And yeah. So I'm just wondering, again, I don't think we should get rid of Kyle Shanahan. The Eagles fans will tell you the worst thing they ever did was get rid of Andy Reid, because they sucked until Doug Peterson after they got rid of Andy Reid. I'm just wondering, from a Kyle development perspective, do you think that might be kind of a missing piece that would force him to, I guess, reevaluate his approach?
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm not saying I'm right or wrong. It's just an observation. Oh, that's interesting. I'd be interested to hear your guys' thoughts.
Appreciate the call, Eric, and a lot of good thoughts. I mean, obviously, there's been so many people that have drawn the Andy Reid, Kyle Shanahan comparison, because a guy that's consistently winning and going to the playoffs and relatively deep into the playoffs, but can't quite get the final job done, and then gets fired after a couple of down years, goes elsewhere. And by the way, what we forget about Andy Reid with Kansas City, relatively was the same thing the first handful of years in Kansas City. His first five years in Kansas City, they won one playoff game, 1-4 in the playoffs.
Yeah.
And our caller, Eric, said the best thing that happened to Andy Reid in his career was being rehired by Kansas City the same offseason he got fired. That's wrong, Eric. The best thing that happened to Andy Reid was them drafting Patrick Mahomes, because that's what turned his career around. 1-4 in the playoffs with the Chiefs, and then Mahomes got here, and they're winning three Super Bowls and going to AFC championship games every other year that they don't. Like, There are similarities, but we can also point to drafting the greatest quarterback of this generation as the reason why we think of Andy Reid as the greatest coach of this generation as well now.
Yeah, it helps. Big time help, for sure. Like, if Andy Reid had Kirk Cousins, are the Chiefs the back-to-back Super Bowl
champs? Absolutely not.
Right, so I do think there's something to that. But I do think it's interesting, and I think that that's where this season, let's assume it just continues this downward trend, and let's call it 6-11. Let's say they win one more game. They beat the Bears. We'll say that. And they go 6-11, and it's just kind of an ugly year. And this offseason, it's an exodus of Deebo Samuel, and maybe Aaron Banks leaves, and okay, they need a new right tackle. And I think maybe that, where you have to fundamentally change who you are as an offense, forces Kyle Shanahan to undergo that change that the caller was talking about with Andy Reid. Maybe he lets go of that dogma, right? These things that make him start or make him play Chris Conley instead of Ricky Pearsall and in key spots. I don't know entirely if that'll help, but it's what I'm watching for sure, because I think something has to change, right? Like, you can't just keep going down this path.
Yeah, yeah. Sterling, we'll get your thoughts on that when we come back from a quick break. We'll ask you about the Andy Reid and Kyle Shanahan comparison and Kyle's stubbornness, because there's no doubt that he is relatively stubborn when it comes to how he coaches and puts the team together. Okay, 888-957-9570. We got more time for your calls. We will also hear from Kyle Shanahan himself. That's coming up on the other side as we continue. It's Mark Grant, Andy, Kyle, Matt, and Sterling Bennett with you. More OT next here on 95.7 The Game.
Now back to overtime with Grandy, Madsen, and Bennett, with sounds from the locker room and your calls at 888-957-9570. Overtime continues now.
Yeah, welcome back. Our guy Cam behind the glass is just teasing us now with Romeo Dobbs' third down conversion highlights over and over again.
I mean, cool, man.
Yeah, thanks, Cam.
We're just giving you a hard time. You're doing great, Cam. By the way, an update, the Sunday night game, Niners have a rooting interest here if you are one that is still believing in the Niners' chances to win the NFC West. Rams and Eagles, we should all be big Eagles fans tonight. Mm-hmm. It is 7-3 Rams, though, early in the second quarter.
The other thing the Niners rooting for, Saquon Barkley less than 100 yards rushing.
Oh, yeah? Niners are rooting for that?
The Niners?
Yeah, they're pulling for it big time.
One person is pulling for that big time. Yeah.
You know, speaking real quick, I want to get back to what we were talking about before the break, and I want to get Sterling's thoughts on it, but just very quickly, the reason I love 49er fans is because not a single person has called in today and been like, actually, everything's fine. This is good. We've had some people who are like, yeah, I'm not, you know, I'm not that upset because this and that,
not
but you know,
trying
it's
to fire
disappointing.
Kyle,
yeah.
But
nobody's been like, you guys need to relax. Like, yeah, thank you, man. This is dire. Like, this is bad.
If
this
someone,
is not going well. I'm glad everybody knows it.
888-957-9570. If you think that this isn't that bad, call and tell us, and we will all scream at you.
No, like, we can all disagree about, like, this is the worst thing, or that's
angry.
The worst thing. Or
we'll get hung up on immediately.
Or whatever the, like, we can all, but the fact that nobody's been like, hey, actually, I thought such and such was pretty good today. Malik Mustafa, that tackle for loss is great.
How about Jalen Moore?
Oh,
yeah.
God.
I mean, Sterling gave
Leonard
him a shout
Floyd
out,
did
right?
have two sacks, mind you.
Leonard Floyd had two sacks immediately after I texted a couple of buddies and was like, man, I've been so underwhelmed by Leonard Floyd as a player. And then just bop, bop.
There
just immediately.
Go. There we go. You got to get those sacks in. Okay, we'll go to the phone lines in a second, but Sterling, I wanted to give you the opportunity to address what Eric in San Francisco asked us on the other side, essentially comparing Andy Reid's journey, longtime coach of the Eagles, generally successful but couldn't get the job done, then a couple of down years, got fired, hired by the Chiefs, and we know what the story is now with him and Patrick Mahomes and that dynasty. Talking about Kyle Shanahan's dogma, or generally his stubbornness, how do you view what Shanahan is going through right now and maybe how that whole journey impacted Andy Reid and on his head coaching journey?
When Andy Reid got fired, I think what Eric's getting at, it was a wake-up call. Okay, mm-hmm. What I'm doing isn't working anymore. I have to make a change, make adjustments, and those adjustments take time. Obviously, it was a work in progress, or a work in progress in KC. Alex Smith was there. Matt Castle was there for a hot minute with Andy Reid, and then they got Patrick Mahomes, and things changed seemingly overnight in Kansas City. But with Kyle, do I think that there's a wake-up call coming in the form of a firing? No. But I do think that, similar to how 2020 was, where they had just said no to Tom Brady. Nope, Jimmy G's our guy. We're not getting Tom Brady. And this team wouldn't have won in 2020 with Tom Brady at all anyways, but still. They said, no, we're sticking to what works for us. Trading Buckner away, getting Javon Kinlaw, Brandon Ayuk, and Then after that year, that was a disaster. Injuries everywhere. There was back and forth with Jimmy Garoppolo's medical, and could he play, could he not play? Shanahan said, you know what? I'm making a change, and it was a massive one. A massive swing for Trey Lance that didn't work, but Shanahan has shown that when they're really good, really successful, he's unafraid to make that big swing the very next season. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure if that big swing, whatever that may be, I'm not sure what it is next year, but I am firmly on the side that says Shanahan is going to make a change in some form or fashion. Whether it is changing the way they draft prospects and how they view the team, going from how they were in 2017 through 2020-ish in regards to trenches first, that has now changed to weaponry first, the cornerbacks, the safeties, the wide receivers and running backs first. Maybe it's a reversion back to what they were when they first came to San Francisco, but I don't think Shanahan is a head coach that, despite all the stubbornness he has in regards to play calling and talking to the media and all that stuff, all that exists, but I think the stubbornness that he doesn't have is the unwillingness to take a big swing after a terrible season like 2020, and I'm going to assume that's going to happen again this offseason as well.
Yeah, I think you make a really good point. He has shown, maybe not in what potentially has to happen this offseason, like not in, along those similar paths, but he has shown the ability to say, all right, XYZ didn't work, let's adjust and figure it out and move forward there. Like, he's going to have to make a change, I would imagine, that he hasn't really had to make before, but you're right, there have been other moments where he's had made major adjustments in other parts of his, I don't know, decision-making process, and it has, while the Trey Lance experiment did not work, I think we were all in agreement, you're not winning with the current quarterback he had. Like, you gotta take a swing. You swung and missed, but taking the swing was the right decision.
Right.
Like, boil it down to the 4th-and-2 decision today. Going for it is the right decision. Maybe the wrong play call. Like, you picked the wrong player. You picked Trey Lance. It didn't work out. You picked the wrong call. But, like,
right. The idea was right.
There's a right process going on there. The execution and actually following through on it did not work. So I think that's a very good point. You can point to moments where he has made major adjustments and said, all right, this is not working. We have to change things up. Maybe you ultimately make the wrong decision and it still does not work out. But there's no denying there has to be some sort of major shift in terms of general philosophy. Team building, coaching staff building, play calling, X, Y, and Z, all those different things. There has to be some sort of change if this continues down the line that it's currently going on.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm right there with you. And that's what next season's about.
Yeah.
So I saw some Bleacher Report, Gridiron, is that what it's called? Whatever.
Gridiron?
Yeah, whatever their football was like. Is Kyle Shanahan on the hot seat?
Yeah, I saw that too.
Like, no, not now. They've had a lot of success, and I think that counts for something. I think it's really worth remembering, and I brought this up last week, I'll bring it up this week, and I'm going to bring it up after every single loss the rest of the way. Jim Harbaugh went to the NFC title game in 2011, the Super Bowl in 2012, the NFC title game in 2013. They went 8-8 in 2014. Jed York said, that's not good enough, you're gone. Then they did the Jim Tom Sula year, they did the Chip Kelly year, and then they got to Kyle Shanahan. They got out from under the Jim Harbaugh thing too early because of the power struggle with Trent Baalke and all that.
That was more than just the wins and losses with Harbaugh. Yeah.
But I think if you're Jed York, you're looking at that, and that's instructive here. Hey, this coach that's had a ton of success. Now, again, there's not nearly as much friction now as there was, and you're right. There was so much more to that than wins and losses. But I think that plays a role in this for the 49ers and for ownership. They don't look at this season as, like, colossal failure. Oh, my God. Like, yeah, it's a failure, but not, oh, this coach can't do what we want to do as a team. I don't think they're there yet.
Yeah. And if we are to continue, like, on the Andy Reid comparison, Philadelphia made the NFC Championship game in 2008. Lost to the Cardinals. Went to the playoffs the next year, lost in the first round. Went to the playoffs the following year, lost in the first round. Then 8-8, didn't make the playoffs. And then 4-12, didn't make the playoffs. Like, there's multiple years of not winning a playoff game, and then not even making the playoffs, and then fully bottoming out to 4-12.
And going the wrong direction.
Yes, yes.
We'll take it further. Then it took them 2 different head coaches, 6 seasons, and a miracle season by Nick Foles to even win a Super Bowl. Like, it took them rebuilding with, I guess you can say, the dream team with Vince Young and DeMarco Murray and Nnamdi Asamoah and Michael Vick. That was the big team, right? And they were terrible. Wildcat Ronnie Brown. Like, it took them literally rebuilding everything, not once, but twice, with two new head coaches, two new cultures, and multiple quarterbacks, MVP Carson Wentz to torn ACL Carson Wentz to Nick Fold miracle run. Now he has a statue outside of the arena. Like, it took literally everything to get back to where they were, and I get it. You people are mad at Kyle Shanahan, and sure, this year has been pretty bad for what the expectations were, but do you want that? You want 6 years of crap of two different rebuilds and multiple different quarterbacks and all that disaster to maybe get a ring? You're better off sticking with Kyle and hope he changes something.
Yes.
That's more bankable than a two new rebuilds to get there.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. I'm in agreement with you as well. 888-957-9570. Up next is Jan in Mountain View. What's up, Jan? You're on Overtime on 95.7 The Game. How you doing?
Oh, pretty good. Thank you. What I was wanting to present is I'd like to know what the definition of special teams is, because every time I look up, there's a team that's off of the regular offensive staff that's helping, you know, break a tackle and they get injured or something else happens. I thought this was a different team, like maybe six individuals that were on the sidelines that came in, you know, after the offensive team went off the field or something. I didn't realize that, you know, they were all connected for one play or another. I'd like to know what the definition is and how many players are supposed to be on there, because every time I look up, there's an offensive player or there's a defensive player. What's the definition? Thank you.
Yeah, appreciate the call and the question, Jan.
Good call.
So special teams, it's not like a whole separate roster or anything. You have what, a 53-man active roster. You have only 48 you can dress on game days, mm-hmm. right? And you have to be very particular with who you're dressing and who's active for a game. Generally speaking, your backups on both offense and defense make up your special teams units, and I'm talking mostly like kickoffs, is like when you're kicking field goals, like the linemen generally are you're still your offensive linemen and all that. Mm-hmm. If you're talking about like kick returners, punt returners, the gunners, the blockers on kickoff and punt returns, those are generally speaking reserve players that would go in and play offense or defense if there was an injury ahead of them. And what Kyle Shanahan has spent so much time talking about this year, and part of why he blames the special team struggles on, is they have had injuries to their starters on offense and defense that has forced reserves into offense and defensive action, which has then forced them to play less experienced players on special teams, and there's kind of a carryover effect. But generally, it's just the reserves on offense and defense that play special teams.
Yeah, everything that's not offense or defense is special teams.
I don't think that's what she was asking.
Was it not?
I think she was figuring out.
Maybe I misunderstood the question.
Who are these players? Who's playing on special teams? Unless I totally misunderstood what she was
saying.
I think you did a good job explaining top to bottom.
I tried my best.
Yeah.
I tried my best. The bottom line is, though, Jan is right, like, every day, every game, you watch a Niners game and you're frustrated by what happens on special teams.
Yeah.
Like, there's no doubt. It was bad again today.
Once again. So, the thing that's wild, and to Jan's question, I guess, the 49ers have signed players, like, specifically to play special teams. Like, it'll be Oren Burks. He's a reserve linebacker, but he's mostly going to play special teams.
George Odom, unless there's an injury.
McLeod.
Yep, Nick McLeod, who's on their practice squad, who they
got
elevated.
Called for holding today.
Who is my guy from Arizona? Zeke Turner, linebacker they signed in the offseason. That cut. Like, they have signed guys specifically to play special teams to try and improve those units, and it doesn't work. They can't figure it out. It is unbelievable.
Not great. Not
it's
great.
Almost like it's the coach.
Yeah, I wonder who has seen that coming from miles and miles and years and years away. And that's got to be...
If there's that one wake-up call Kyle Shanahan might need, it might be firing Brian Schneider when the year's over with.
Yes, that is something that has to happen.
That's the wake-up call.
Get Brian Schneider out of there. He's like, hey, dang. You know what? I should use Jordan Mason and Christian McCaffrey. That's crazy.
That's just the mental block. That's blocking everything else.
Hey, why do you guys think Jordan Mason doesn't play more?
Sterling returns kicks to open games.
Oh, okay. Because he plays special teams?
Yeah.
Perfect.
It's honestly a very good question.
Yeah, no idea.
That's the thing I haven't been able to get my head around.
Like,
and I would
I think the best way to use Jordan Mason, and obviously he was very good like the first 6 weeks of the year, and then you could kind of sense him wearing down a little bit. And you and I and Sterling, we've all talked about this all year. And I think I brought this up maybe week two or week three. Like, there was going to come a time where if you give Mason 20 carries every single game, like, he's going to wear down. And he clearly did. I think the perfect way to use Jordan Mason, give him like 7 touches a game. And just let him average like 6 yards a carry on those 7 touches. He will give you those 6 yards a carry.
And if he does start going at 6, 7, 8 yards a carry, keep giving it to him.
Until he doesn't anymore.
Like, I understand wanting, and I guess this is what we had a caller earlier kind of talking about this. And I don't agree on giving Deebo Samuel the Christian McCaffrey touches. But I do agree that, like, why isn't I understand, like, I understand that Christian McCaffrey is the reigning offensive player of the year and was third in MVP voting last year, scored 21 touchdowns, led the league in touches and scrimmage yards. I understand how good he is.
Yeah.
What I don't understand is how he and Jordan Mason can't coexist in an offense. I would love to get Kyle Shanahan in a room and, like, show me on film why this doesn't work. Show me why this, not one snap of it.
I was begging fourth and two.
Do something interesting. Do
something different. McCaffrey in the slot, Mason on the left hip of Allen. Come on, please.
It's like what you're doing clearly isn't working, so try something different. Hey.
Which is so weird because it's not like in previous years, the reason why Jordan Mason wasn't the number two back was because Shanahan loved Elijah Mitchell, and he had that great 2021 year, and he could pass block, and Mason was so good on special teams. Okay, well, Mitchell's out, so Mason becomes a de facto number two behind Christian McCaffrey. That makes sense. But now this year, Mason has been the more efficient and better runner, even when CMC's healthy. Yeah, you're actively choosing to keep that guy off the field. I get there's money involved, there's status involved, all those things.
Mm-hmm.
And I get CMC being the guy that gets 10-plus carries a game. But the fact is that you can honestly argue a more effective Niners offense this year involves Jordan Mason more than Deebo Samuel and more than Christian McCaffrey.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And no one's saying don't give Christian McCaffrey the football. It's just saying there is better ways to get him the football than just not utilizing Jordan Mason to do so. That's the issue. Is that you're keeping, right now, your best ball carrier on the sideline, not because he didn't earn it or deserve it, because you're choosing to not do it. Mm-hmm. And that's a problem.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And it is something that the Niners, I would love, as you talked about, Kyle, to get a real answer from Kyle Shanahan about that, because obviously he doesn't have to tell the truth to the media anytime he gets asked that question, but I would love to know the actual reason behind it, because it just seems like when you got McCaffrey in there and you've got a running back in there who's proven that on a limited number of touches, he could be very, very, very effective. I don't know how that doesn't help your offense out. Yep. One other area that the Niners seem to really struggle, and not seem, that they definitely struggled in today. Defensively, trying to tackle Josh Jacobs. Josh Jacobs broke 15 tackles today alone. Josh Jacobs by himself. That's the most by a single ball carrier in a game this year. The Niners as a team missed 20 tackles. And I want to play something for you. This is from Niners defensive coordinator Nick Sorensen. Early October, after the loss at home to the Cardinals, before the win in Seattle that at the moment we thought kind of revived the season. This was Nick Sorensen, after the Cardinals lost, asked about Niners missed tackles, specifically in that Cardinals game, but really it's been an issue all season. Here's Nick Sorensen nearly 2 months ago.
We miss tackles sometimes because we're aggressive. Like, we do coach our guys to take their shots. If you show, like, make me a cut up of those tackles, and I'll tell you if it's a good or bad one, to be honest. I mean, that's just, we play aggressive, we play violent. We have, you know, sometimes Fred shows up with quite a few missed tackles, but if a guy stops his feet and they're having to take time and that guy loses a yard, but you kind of fall off and now we've got two other guys coming, then that's not a bad missed tackle. Sometimes they're a little bit different. I'd have to quantify it by looking at tape. Then I could probably talk you through if they're good or bad or not.
That was Nick Sorensen nearly 2 months ago on missed tackles. That has still becoming an issue, is still an issue. 20 missed tackles today, and I would ask Nick Sorensen, hey, of the 20 missed tackles, Nick, how many were bad missed tackles? Because to me, it looked like they were just all insane. Pretty darn bad.
Just an insane answer. Like, missing a tackle is objectively a bad thing. Maybe other guys fly in to make the tackle instead.
And he's saying they're coaching that. They're coaching them to be overly aggressive. And sometimes, as a result, you're missing tackles.
Yeah, and I get. I mean, I guess it's like base running, right? Like, there's an aggressive base running mistake in baseball. You're trying to stretch your single into a double, and you know what? You got thrown out. But hey, good aggressive mistake, I guess. But that wasn't what I saw today almost ever. It was just guys whiffing in the open field or guys not wrapping up in the backfield. Like, it just, I can't get behind the idea of a good missed tackle. And the context of that, by the way, was in week four against the Patriots. They missed a season high 17 missed, had 17 missed tackles.
Yikes.
They followed that up against Arizona with 12. So they had 29 missed tackles across 2 weeks. You cannot sit there if you're a defensive coordinator. There's nothing he could say. There's nothing he could show me on film that would be like, oh, you know what? That's actually, most of those are good. Most of those are good missed tackles. Love the over-aggressiveness. Like, whatever it is, it doesn't work, Nick. Whatever you're teaching is not working.
20 missed tackles today.
20! 20! That's so many.
And that's what happens when you hire a defensive coordinator as your third choice, and he's the guy that's running the get-the-ball drills a year ago.
Yep.
He's a guy that wants to attack, and as Tom Brady says 90,000 times on the broadcast, it's a swarming defense, right? Like, yeah, that's what it was.
He did say that
it
a
was
lot.
A swarming defense.
That was the D'Amico Ryans thing.
Swarm.
Yes.
Yeah.
It was their motto, not the way they played defense, but there was a play in this game. And it, which happened so many times, so it kind of all molds together. But there's a Wilson on the Packers. He's running towards the outside.
Mm-hmm. Emmanuel.
And it's Jair Brown is the only person on the outside. Your job as a safety, the last line of defense, is to force him back inside to the tackles to hope that even if you miss a tackle, there is the rest of the guys there to finish it off for you. What does Jair Brown do? He cuts inside and says, hey, Wilson, have the entire seam and the sideline to run.
Yep.
19 yards later, a first down. It leads to a Green Bay Packers field goal later, make it 10-0. It's stuff like that, okay, nobody minds when Hufanga or your safeties, or even Mustafa in this game, take a chance, they blitz, they're in the backfield, they want to make a big play, and get a tackle for loss. We're all for that. We love playmaking safeties. But the issue is that when your playmaking safeties aren't making plays and they're being, dare I say, just not playing smart football and they're not guiding the running back inside the tackles, that's bad defense. It's just playing bad defense. You can miss a few tackles here or there. It happens. If that total was 10, not 20, okay, this game probably isn't 38-10. Maybe it's 24-10 still. Like, the fact is, you missed 20 tackles. You can say, yeah, we play fast. We're going to miss some tackles here or there. But 20? And it's not just, oh, Josh Jacobs is great. It's no, you're playing bad fundamental defense leading to 20 missed tackles.
Yeah, and the point of that soundbite from 2 months ago just proves that it has been something that has been hurting the Niners all season long, and who knows what has exactly been happening behind closed doors, but based on what happened today, it doesn't really seem like it's being addressed, Kyle.
20 missed tackles today, but like 9 of them, good missed tackles.
Yeah, we like to
the
see
kind
that
of missed
of our
tackle
guys.
We like to see.
Not all missed tackles are created equal. We no, all know this.
Many have said this. Yeah,
we know this. All right. We got to take a quick break. We got one more segment with you here on Overtime. We will hear from Kyle Shanahan, I promise, coming up next. It's Mark Randy, Kyle Madsen, Sterling Bennett with you. The Niners fall in Green Bay today 38-10. They're 5-6 on the season. Somehow, some way, still only a game out of the NFC West because the Cardinals lost in Seattle today. The Rams right now at home against the Eagles. They lead by 1, but the Philadelphia Eagles are on the move towards the end of the first half. It's currently 7-6. Rams lead the Eagles. Time for a break. We're back with more Overtime next on 95.7 The Game.
Now back to Overtime with Grandy, Madsen, and Bennett with sounds from the locker room and your calls at 888-957-9570. Overtime continues now.
Yeah, that was a fun moment in this football game. Maybe one of the few fun moments the Niners had as they lose 38-10 to the Green Bay Packers. It was a George Kittle 3-yard touchdown catch from Brandon Allen. It capped an 11-play, 65-yard drive. It got the Niners within 10. That was at the very end of the first half. The Packers, though, should have found a way to score right after that because Jordan Love hit Christian Watson in the hands for what would have been a walk-in long touchdown, but he dropped it. But the Niners got back within 10, had the ball twice, down by that same score in the third quarter, but could not score either time. They ultimately lose 38-10. The call you just heard courtesy of Fox, Kevin Burkhardt, Tom Brady on the call, doing a good job as always, but the Niners lose 38-10. They're now 5-6 on the season, still though somehow only a game out of the first spot in the NFC West because the Cardinals, they put up a stinker in Seattle. The Seahawks defend home field, and they knock off the Arizona Cardinals. The Rams right now on Sunday Night Football in a battle late first half. It's 7-6 in favor of the Rams. The Eagles, though, second in goal as we speak right now. What's up?
Not looking good for the Niners on that Saquon Barkley rushing total.
Oh, yeah. What is he at now? Is he already over?
Nah, he's at 73.
73. Yeah, not great. I mean, Saquon's been amazing this year.
Unbelievable, dude. They just put a stat up that in his time with the Giants, he averaged 1.4 yards before contact. And this year, he's at 2.6.
Wow. It's almost doubling.
Unreal, dude. Unreal. The Eagles are good. The Eagles are really, really good in the NFC.
They are. They are very, very good. Yeah, I mean, it's funny because we spend so much time talking about...
Another guy got walloped on the
AJ Brown dropped it. They spend so much time... We spend so much time talking about how maybe running backs not, like, terribly important across the NFL. Like, there's kind of become a reckoning. Like, you don't need to pay running backs anymore. Saquon Barkley, great things with the Eagles. Derrick Henry turning that Ravens offense into, like, the best offense in the NFL. Joe Mixon is having himself a hell of a season with the Texans. And
Tony Pollard in Tennessee.
Yeah, Tony Pollard in Tennessee. Aaron Jones hasn't really been that healthy, but when he's been healthy, he's been very effective for the Vikings. Like, you got a lot of veteran running backs who kind of were cast off by all of their respective teams, and they're the reason why a lot of those teams have kind of turned it around.
I think if you're plugging a player into a good system or a good foundation, it works.
Yeah.
But I think if you're a team picking in the top five, a running back isn't going to save your franchise. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
But Ashton Jeanty, Boise State, who knows? Right.
That's a good example. I don't think Jacksonville stinks. Like I don't think they're as bad as their record. If they drafted Ashton Jeanty at what, fourth or fifth, I wouldn't hate it. It wouldn't be the worst thing.
Yeah.
And that defense still stinks. Yeah. Can't stop anybody. Well, you can probably score with everybody at that point.
Yeah, no, that's a good point.
You know how you're talking about the Niners rooting for Saquon's under yardage to hit?
Yeah.
Niners rooting for that Ashton Jeanty Heisman ticket. Someone's got a future for Jeanty to win the Heisman.
Oh, yeah.
And that guy would be... this guy. So, come on. Get it done, Boise. Get it done, Ashton Jeanty. Anyways, we're off topic. We got 20-ish more minutes with you here on Overtime on 95.7. The game is the Niners fall to the Packers 38-10 today in Green Bay. Let's hear from Kyle Shanahan. We will also give out game balls to close things out. As always, this is going to be really difficult to hand out game balls for this game. That's how bad it was and how barren it was for the 49ers. We will do that coming up in a little bit. But first, Kyle Shanahan speaking post-game in Green Bay. After the Niners 38-10 loss to the Green Bay Packers, here it is, Niners head coach Kyle Shanahan.
All three led to touchdowns, so 21 points. You top that with the penalties and stuff, and that's how you get embarrassed like that. The first one, they had 12 personnel, two tight ends in the huddle, which means we have base defense out. They sent another receiver on the field to sub, which when they sub, they're supposed to allow us to sub. So as soon as they did that, we started to change our personnel, and then they rushed up to the line and snapped it. It was a strategic play by them, but one that I don't feel should have been allowed. They didn't give us time to sub on that. And That's why I was upset on that. And then the next one, because they got away with the first one, they tried to do it again the next play. And that's when I went out there arguing again. This time they did allow us to sub. I was out there screaming the whole time, so I'm not exactly aware of what happened with our 12 guys. But obviously we had 12 guys out there. They gave us time to sub, and we didn't get one off. So the second one was on us. I mean, you know, when you play first half like that, you know, we got to be on in the second half. And I loved how we came out on that kick return. I thought that was going to give us some huge momentum. Got called back with that penalty. So we had to go on a long, good drive. And on that drive, I think we got stopped on fourth and two. But our defense, I think, held them to a three and out. So we got it right back. And we were driving. And that seemed like a hell of a throw. They had some soft zone. And he threaded in there between their two backers. And looked like it went off Debo's hands. And that was huge because we were trying to get back in the game. But also because they got a big return and got 7 points off of it. Big. I mean, that was huge at the beginning of the game. I mean, you know, we were struggling to get the ball at the beginning of the game and both of those first two drives. And then we had second and one and go back to second and six on that tip ball. And then the next one we started in first and 20. So I thought that killed us in the opening drives. And I'll see on those special team ones, you know, a couple I looked up on the scoreboard and, you know, see on the plane how much we agree with them or not, but we got to be much better with the penalties, obviously.
I know you never want those issues, but when you're missing as many key guys as you are, is it even more imperative to play clean?
Yeah, definitely. I'm really not concerned right now about how many guys we missed today. We don't play good enough, so that's not a factor. But when you are missing some guys, you do have to be better. And when you have those penalties, when we didn't stop the run like we did, and having those three turnovers in the second half, that's how you get embarrassed.
When did Brandon
What was your assessment of how Allen performed? I
thought Allen, you know, from what I saw, I mean, first of all, you know, we all got embarrassed. No one played that great. But Brandon, and I thought he did some good things. I thought he made some big throws. You know, just the plays I can think of, you know, he had a rough one in the beginning that he threw to them. They dropped. Two plays he just slipped on that field that, you know, hurt us. But I thought Brandon made some big throws and stuff and gave us a chance.
When did he meet his finger?
Whenever we, it was a few weeks ago, whenever we reported it.
Why start him in spite of that?
Because he's not hurt.
Okay.
You said why start him? Why start him because of the injury?
In spite of the injury.
He's fine. He hurt his fingers like 3 weeks ago. No, I mean, we haven't done anything since. He's been rehabbing the whole time here, and I'm sure we'll take him to some stuff early Monday or Tuesday and got a better idea then.
How close was Trent today? What was that decision?
It was close. I mean, it took it all the way up to now, but I mean, all the way up till today. But, you know, he was hurting yesterday a little worse than last week at this time, which made us nervous, and didn't wake up good today. I mean, we didn't get our run game going much. I think we only had about 14 carries, and we didn't see much from anybody today.
Do you feel like you guys have lost some of that physicality that you guys tried to, you know, have as a building block for this team?
In what aspect?
It just seems that in the running game both ways, you know, the offensive running game and then the run defense just seems to be, it almost feels like you guys are kind of getting pushed around up front.
I mean, yeah, it's a good old line. They got a good scheme. You know, they ran the ball well. I mean, when you say we're missing physicality, I mean, we are missing some guys, you know, especially some of the more physical guys in terms of like Greenlaw and stuff and some of our D linemen and, you know, losing our biggest run stopper and Jordan Elliott during that game. So when you're missing some guys out there, which makes a difference, but I thought they did better in the runs versus in the second half. Offensively, I don't think we're lacking physicality. We just didn't get a run game going today, and a lot of that has to do with not attempting to do much of it, too. It's good. All right, guys.
All right, there's a relatively despondent Kyle Shanahan after the 49ers lost to the Packers in Green Bay 38-10. The one moment that stands out was when, of course, Kyle Shanahan was asked about Brandon Allen's broken left middle finger and asked why he still started him despite the broken finger, and Shanahan He's essentially, after making sure he was re-asked the question, making sure he understood the question fully, essentially said, well, he's not really hurt. It's not really bothering him anymore. But he got a little bit snippy, as he has at times this year, and you can understand it. I mean, I'm sure he's incredibly frustrated, but that was an interesting moment in this post-game presser.
I'm not there every day. I'm not totally sure, but just based on context clues and watching all these press conferences, I think the source of the question might have generated a little frustration. If I can say that.
Yes.
Yes.
No, I yeah, like, Brandon Allen's a backup quarterback. If that finger was part of the reason that he struggled today, I think that they wouldn't have started him. But I didn't watch Brandon Allen today at any point go, well, it's obviously the finger. Like, the ball that he fumbled, it wasn't like he dropped a snap. If he had been dropping snaps and handoffs all day, okay, that's one thing. But, like, it's on his non-throwing hand.
Yeah.
I don't think it had an impact at all. I couldn't care less about Brandon Allen's finger injury.
Was that sloppy field out there, though?
That's why, yeah, he kept slipping. That's what it was.
The other thing that Kyle Shanahan brought up, and it was at the very, very beginning, the 49ers managed to find a way to commit the same penalty on consecutive plays. And I don't know how we didn't even bring this up until now.
Great point.
It was at the very beginning of the second quarter. When was this? Let me find out exactly when it was. The Packers were about to go down, and they were in the red zone. They were driving, and the 49ers trying to sub a player off. The Packers quick snapped the 49ers, and you heard Kyle Shanahan say he didn't think that snap should have been allowed to happen that quick because the Packers sub, they need to allow the Niners to sub. Whatever, it did not happen. That one is understandable. Packers gotcha. Maybe the refs missed one. Okay, but the very next snap, literally the very next snap, 12 men on the field again, and this wasn't like they caught you again. You were running a guy off the field. You guys had 12 men lined up, ready to play a snap of football. The exact same play immediately before it, also 12 men on the field. The fact that happened on consecutive plays, that just shows, I think, what you led the show off with, Kyle, the general unpreparedness of this football team, the general lack of any sort of, I don't know, realistic desire to come out and try to win this game, the lack of focus, that penalty to happen on consecutive plays is absolutely unforgivable.
I hate the phrase inexcusable because so many things that are excusable, people call excusable. Like 5 for 37 from 3, inexcusable. Like, yeah, sometimes you're going to miss shots. Like, it's fine. But that is inexcusable. Play stopped. Like you said, it wasn't the first one. They caught him off guard.
Yeah, that's whatever.
Devondre Campbell a little slow getting off. Whoever it was that came on, Kalia Davis or whoever it was.
Kalia Davis, yeah.
A little slow to get on. All right, you know what? Stuff happens. But play stops. You know, dang, we had 12 dudes on the field. Let's make sure to not do that again. And then you just have 12 dudes on the field again? That can't be a thing that happens.
Yeah.
Not because it lost in the game. But it's that attention to detail. It's that, hey, we're super locked in. Here's exactly what we're doing. We have this very specific plan. That's insane. 12 men on the field after what amounts to a timeout is crazy.
Wayne, you're forgetting some context. On the first 12th man call, it was offsetting penalties. It didn't even count. And they had to come together and talk about it and go, okay, what were the penalties here? Who was involved? And they said, you know what? After like a 30-second delay, both teams are at fault, offset, 2nd and 7 all over again. And San Francisco still, after that, got called for the same penalty, which led to a 17-0 score by Green Bay. So whether it was a held to a field goal or whatnot, whether it changed the game at all, it obviously didn't. But it's like small stuff like that that has been filtered in throughout the entirety of the year. It's this unbuttoned up nature by a Kyle Shanahan team that has haunted them in previous years, in playoffs, and today. Now, today didn't matter that much, but it's the fact that in those moments, it's highlighted so much where you're like, yep, this is who they've been for a long time. Yep. It's cost them over and over again in pivotal moments. You can go back to last year in the Super Bowl. Yep, not knowing the overtime rules. It's unbuttoned up. It's unprepared. Mm-hmm. And the fact is, your defensive coordinator, whoever's in charge of defensive substitutions, failed. Not once, but twice
in a row.
On back-to-back plays where you had a chunk of time to figure things out and make the correct substitutions you wanted to. And it's like, at that moment, and there was a play later in the game where Shanahan called timeout on for the defense. That never happens.
Mm-hmm.
That happened in the Super Bowl, and then he fired Steve Wilkes later. And I'm trying to connect things that don't actually connect, but him calling a timeout for the defense, that never happens,
yeah,
ever.
That's pretty
bad. It happened today. And I was like, oh, okay, it's third down. Shanahan's calling timeouts. He obviously doesn't like the call somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Something's up. Something's got to be up.
Yeah, mentions to microcosm, I think, of the season as a whole. All right, we got a few minutes left here with you on overtime. Before we get to game balls, and we're going to try our best to give out game balls, it's going to be tough. We will try our best. I did want to give you guys a little bit of some good news.
Oh, I love good news.
We want a little bit of a fun factoid, historical factoid for the 49ers. George Kittle, 6 catches today, now up to 509 in his Niners career. He passed both Dwight Clark and Roger Craig for third most catches in Niners franchise history.
That's big time.
Behind Jerry Rice and behind T.O. George Kittle is number 3.
Might catch Jerry Rice someday.
No, probably not.
30 years.
He is, let's see, you're going to do the math. He is 83 away from tying T.O.
Oh, we might get there.
We might
get
do that. Wow.
But he is not even halfway to Jerry Rice.
That's okay.
That's how good, that's how good Jerry Rice was. Yeah. Congrats to George Kittle. Passed a couple of greats, Dwight Clark and Roger Craig. Now third on the Niners all-time receptions list in their franchise history. Okay, let's get to it. Game balls as we always do. If you guys want to get super creative, hell, if you want to pick Packers, be my guest. Whatever the hell you want. We'll start on offense. Game balls on offense. Kyle, I will give you first dibs. Go ahead. Who do you got? Game ball on offense.
Game ball on offense. You know what? I did this as an honorable mention last week. I'm going to just do it this week. Jordan Mason. Shout out to Jordan Mason.
Yeah.
Getting in their first carry, 16 yards. Outrushed the 49ers by himself on that play. That was their longest rush of the day.
Yeah.
I think their only explosive run of the day as well belonged to Jordan Mason.
Yeah.
Salute to Jordan Mason, who I'm just going to keep talking him up until he starts playing more.
Salute Jordan Mason. All right, Sterling, offensive game ball. Who do you got?
Well, don't forget, Jordan Mason had the longest kick return of the day, 29 yards.
Wow.
That's a great point. Yeah, hey, and for special teams. Nice job, Jordan.
Did not fumble that one out of bounds.
That's right. That's right. There really is only one other option for San Francisco on offense, so I'll just take it. George Kittle, 6 catches, 82 yards, 1 touchdown, the only touchdown of the day for San Francisco. The amazing, I guess you could say, opposite hip catch from Brandon Allen today. Kittle just continues to prove, doesn't matter who the quarterback is, he is going to be the all-pro that he's always been. So George Kittle gets my game ball.
Yeah, that's a good pick. That's the easy pick. I was not expecting it to last to me, so good job, Sterling. I'll go next, offensive game ball. I'll go kind of off the board here just because it was the 49ers' first down of the game. Kyle Juszczyk
with
the 14-yard catch.
Love to see it.
Now, that was his only offensive touch of the game, so it is what it is. But the Niners were very, very rough through the first few drives. Kyle Juszczyk, 14-yard catch. I believe it was on third down to convert, and they got the chains moving a little bit there. I'll give Kyle Juszczyk a shout-out for what he did on that specific play. He gets a game ball for me, but that's just how rough it was offensively for the 49ers. And then we'll transition to defense. We'll go in reverse order, so I'll go first this time. Relatively easy one when you just look at the statistics in this one. I'll take the guy that had 2 sacks, Leonard Floyd, the only 2 sacks for the 49ers in this game. And I believe at least one of them came in a relatively big moment when this game was not over. The second one was kind of teetering on game over territory. But Leonard Floyd showed up for a couple of plays in this game. Those 2 sacks, 4 total tackles in the football game. You needed him to be good without Nick Bosa. He wasn't great, but he was the Niners' best pass rusher by a wide margin. Leonard Floyd, game ball for 2 sacks today. Sterling, you're up next. Who do you give a game ball to for defense?
I think I will give it to Fred Warner. And only because of one play, and the play that means nothing in retrospect, meaningless. But San Francisco had just turned the ball over on downs on fourth down, the 4th-and-2 incompletion to Christian McCaffrey, and the Green Bay's near midfield. And this is a chance. It is 17-7. They can go up and make it 24-7. And the defense answers, gets a big three and out on Leonard Floyd's sack. Who is running up the seam with Christian Watson? Fred Warner.
Man.
Side by side with the wide receiver that that dropped the wide open touchdown early in the game. What are you throwing into him? I have no idea. But it's stuff like that that doesn't go in box scores that you don't see on the broadcast that you look at it and you go, that is an all-pro play from an all-pro player. And I think Fred Warner deserves some flowers for that play, so he'll get my defensive game ball.
What do you think, Kyle?
I love that pick. I'm going Renardo Green.
Okay.
I know he got flagged for the PI. I thought that was kind of a ticky-tack PI penalty.
Yeah.
That was the one in the end zone.
Yeah.
But he was credited with one pass breakup. He had the near interception off the bad throw behind, I think it was Dobbs, who got tipped up in the air. He nearly had that. Renardo Green just continues showing up. Like, every time the Niners defense is on the field, there's 2-3 plays a game where, man, you know what? Renardo Green, nice play there. So, salute to the rookie. He continues to play really well.
Was it, we were talking about the 12 men on the field penalty, the first one where the Packers caught the Niners trying to sub late. That was a free play. Jordan Love just threw it into the end zone. That was Malik Mustafa who had the interception, but it never lasted. Mm-hmm. That was Mustafa,
yeah.
Right?
Yep.
Okay.
Correct,
yeah.
Yes.
He had an okay game.
He had Mustafa. The big hit in the backfield. That was cool.
He had an incredible, massive. Incredible hit in the backfield. That was a tackle for loss. One of the Niners' five tackles for loss in the game.
Everybody just do that. Why can't everyone just do that?
Yeah, come on. I mean, he's good for like one of those a game.
Yeah.
Malik Mustafa is. He's a lot of fun to watch. But
Can I give a like
honorable mention or
no, what? The other way.
Oh.
Yeah, just like one of those.
Mention.
Yeah, dishonorable. No, that's not what I'm looking for.
I hope it's who I think it is.
No, I don't know how I feel, and obviously we gotta bounce here soon. But today was the first day that I've really been like, I don't know how I feel about Jair Brown as a starting safety moving forward.
Mm.
I feel like I very rarely notice him where I'm like, dang, heck of a play by Jair Brown there. Just he's missing a tackle here. He's dropping an interception there.
As Sterling pointed to, he was the reason why, right? It was him that allowed Wilson to get outside, didn't get out, take outside leverage.
Yeah, just, I don't know. I don't know how I feel about him.
I'll say this.
He'll be back next year because he has to be.
I'll say this about Jair Brown. You're right. There haven't been a ton of moments where you just watch a play and you're like, Jair Brown made that play.
Yeah, and he was Dark Horse Pro Bowl guy this year. I was all about the Jair Brown experience.
It's kind of either been he's been invisible or he's like, ooh, he made a mistake there.
Yeah.
It's kind of what the Jair Brown experience has been this year.
I will say this, though. Jair Brown's struggles may open the door for a Talanoa Hufanga return next year in free agency. Never know.
It might be a relatively cheap return.
Yeah, given the injury stuff.
Given the injury stuff. And he hasn't, I mean, even last year before he got hurt, he wasn't playing great.
If he came back this year, he has to play over Tig, right? Jair Brown, sorry.
Yes.
You move Mustafa,
I don't know why I'm calling
AP,
him by his nickname.
Yeah. I think
you guys
so.
Are tight. Don't worry. You guys are buddies.
I think you just play your two best players there. Jair Brown doesn't do enough for
might
me
not
to
be
like.
Might not
oh,
be one of your two best safeties. Mustafa definitely is.
Yeah, he's been a good player.
He definitely
he's your
is.
Best safety.
Yes, no doubt. All right, that's all we got time for today. The Niners lose in Green Bay today, 38-10. The Niners up next. They are on the way to Buffalo Sunday Night Football a week from now. A week from now, that game will be going on, and then we got you covered for post-game after that. I hope every one of you out there has a good Thanksgiving. We'll be back after Thanksgiving as we continue to recover from our food comas on Sunday. Niners and Bills, 5:20 on Sunday. Of course, we got pregame coverage. Then we got postgame coverage, as always, here on 95.7 The Game. And we're live and local every day this week here on 95.7 The Game, except for Thanksgiving. So keep it locked all day, all week. I'm sure there will be a ton of Niners reactions tomorrow and Tuesday and even Wednesday and Friday as well. Okay, for Kyle Madsen, for Sterling Bennett, for Cam Williams behind the glass doing a great job. My name is Mark Randy signing off. Thanks so much for tuning in to Overtime here on 95.7 The Game. The Niners fall 38-10, and they're now 5-6 on the year. Thanks so much for listening. We'll talk next time on 95.7 The Game.